When it comes to climate change, plants and animals face a tough ultimatum: adapt or perish. Trevor Lloyd Evans has spent the past 40 years observing the wildlife, particularly birds, that surround his lab at the Manomet Center for Conservation Sciences. He says it's obvious the natural world is responding to rising temperatures.
There really is a change. There's a noticeable and measurable change, which is amazing to me. I mean, I learned that evolution worked extremely slowly, and it still does. But natural selection can work quite quickly. And we're seeing recognizable changes just in 3 or 4 degrees.
As he walks through the woods on a chilly late December morning, Lloyd Evans points out some of those changes. Here, a southern tupelo tree. There, a bird species that didn't used to spend the winter here.
Oh, two turkey vultures, exactly, coming in from the side here.
The turkey vulture is one of nearly 200 eastern bird species whose winter territories have shifted north in the past 50 years, in some cases by hundreds of miles. But Lloyd Evans says that even more important than where birds spend the winter is where they are come early spring.
So in the spring, they are feeding on a very temperature-sensitive prey, which would be insects that are hatching out in correlation with leaves that are coming out earlier and correlating with temperature.
Migrating birds need perfect timing to hit that all-important spring bloom. Lloyd Evans says that birds who time their spring migrations based on temperature cues are arriving back in southern Massachusetts as much as 9 days earlier than they did just 40 years ago. But long-distant migrants who rely on internal clocks aren't making the adjustment.
So if you are in South America, there is no way that you know it's a warmer spring. You have to rely on, again, that internal clock, that annual rhythm, and you come back at the same time. And the hope is that it has not been a warmer spring up here.
With average temperatures expected to rise another 4 to 5 degrees Fahrenheit over the next several decades, that's an increasingly risky gamble. Lloyd Evans cites examples of bird populations already in decline because they've fallen out of sync. He says the birds hold a cautionary tale for humans. Those unwilling or unable to adapt to a changing climate could face harsh consequences. Last fall, scientists and state officials gathered at the Wareham headquarters of AD Makepeace to recognize the company's initiatives to prepare their real estate developments and cranberry bogs for a warmer, more volatile climate. A few years ago, such efforts might have been controversial, viewed by some as giving up on the higher goal of reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Hector Galbraith is director of the Manomet Center's climate change initiatives. He says that's changing as more people realize we're already seeing the impacts of global warming and additional disruptions are inevitable.
Even if we stopped all of the greenhouse gas emissions going into the atmosphere right now, the climate will continue to warm for another 2-3 decades because of the inertia in the climate system. So we have to adapt.
But this isn't an either-or situation. Carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere are already almost 1.5 times what they were 200 years ago. Without efforts to dramatically reduce greenhouse gas emissions, Galbraith cautions, we could find ourselves pushing the limits of what we can adapt to.
Without mitigation, there is no adaptation, and that is correct. Because if we're really heading toward a tripling of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, and that's entirely possible, it's going to be very difficult to adapt.
Massachusetts has committed to cutting emissions to 1/5 of 1990 levels by the year 2050. Last year, state officials released a plan that calls for increasing energy efficiency and renewable energy production and decreasing emissions from transportation. Ben Foreman, research director at Mass Inc., says that's a good start, but he questions whether it will be enough to get us to the ultimate target.
Most of our effort has been focused on the near term, what we can do before 2020, and that has really focused on what the low-hanging fruit is, not the more difficult changes that really take a lot of support for altering the way we live.
Massachusetts Secretary of Energy and Environmental Affairs Richard Sullivan shows no sign of such doubts.
Whether you're talking job growth or, you know, smarter decisions on energy or carbon sequestration and carbon emissions reductions, we are going to be hitting our targets and we are going to be the national leaders.
Manomet's Galbraith says Massachusetts officials have good reason to be proud, that New England, particularly Massachusetts, is way ahead of the curve when it comes to public policies on climate change. And with the failure of both federal climate legislation and international greenhouse gas treaties, many analysts say the state and local level is where the real action is when it comes to addressing climate change. For WCAI, the Cape and Islands NPR station, I'm Heather Goldstone.